I've started the recorder, and we are in NTI Revelation chapter 6, which is on page 469 in the Kindle. Same in the paper. Okay. And I have my Bible with me, Dan, because for the first time when you go through Revelation, in order to really understand what's happening, even in NTI, you have to keep reading from the Bible. So I have my Bible with me, and it's kind of interesting because of all the books in the Bible, Revelation is one of the most bizarre, is that fair to say?
Yeah,
most bizarre. And so here, that's the one that we're reading. It's kind of funny. So I'm opening up to Revelation chapter 6 because I do have a little book icon, right, starting from the beginning, asking me to read from it. So I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 from the Bible first. I'm in Hebrews. I said, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't. It's in the wrong book. Having trouble turning these little pages. All right, here we go. I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. So just as a review in our story, last week John had a vision, and he went into heaven, and he saw, I guess it was probably God upon the throne, and then he saw the 24 elders and the rainbow and the crystal lake and all of that. And then there was a scroll with seven seals on it. And John was very, very sad because nobody was worthy to open the scroll. And then they said, oh, look, the Lamb of God, you know, he's worthy to open the scroll. And so now he's going to be opening the scroll with the seven seals. So that's where we are in the story that's in the book of Revelation. So I watched as the Lamb opened the first of the seven seals. Then I heard one of the four living creatures, and you remember them, they had eyes all over them, and they represented enlightened sight. Then I heard one of the four living creatures say in a voice like thunder, come. I looked, and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown, and he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest. So we have the first of the seven seals, and out comes this white horse with a rider who is bent on conquest. So now we're going to see how NTI interprets that horse. This is my favorite horse, by the way. I love it. I have a picture of this horse hanging in my bedroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you'll see why in a moment. The first of the seven seals on the scroll of life represents that which must always come first. The rider of the white horse, bent on conquest, represents full dedication to the true desire of the heart. I have spoken of this to you before, but it cannot be overemphasized, especially now. It is the desire that you allow which leads you. And so if you want to be led in a straight line without delay, you must allow the true desire to lead without distraction. Stay fully focused on one desire now. That is to ride out as a conqueror bent on conquest. So you can see now why the white stallion is hanging in my bedroom. He represents being fully focused on the desire to awaken without distraction for other desires. And that's being bent on conquest. Bent on conquest. And when I moved here, my address is 1048 West Stallion Drive. But when you write it on an envelope, it's 1048 W Stallion Drive. And one friend wrote back to me and says, oh, how marvelous, you live on White Stallion Drive, just like True Desire. I thought, oh, how wonderful. But, you know, this is really important. This italicized line, at least it's italicized in the Kindle. It's line number 4. It says, it is the desire that you allow which leads you. And that's really important because if we have a lot of different desires, you know, we're going to be led in all different directions, which really means you don't go anywhere consistently. But if we focus all of our attention on the desire for awakening or the desire for truth or however you word that desire, and really put it as our only desire and put it out in front, then everything that happens to us, even, we view through that, and that's how we come to see everything is here for our awakening, Every relationship, every circumstance, every event is here to help me let go of the ego and realize the truth. So having this desire out front is very, very important, and that's why it's listed here. So now I'm going to read verses 3 and 4 from the Bible. When the Lamb opened the second seal, I heard the second living creature say, "Come." Then another horse came out, a fiery red one. Its rider was given power to take peace from the earth and to make men slay each other. To him was given a large sword. All right, so NTI says, the second seal represents that which is not true, but seems true within the mind. This is the symbol of fear hidden by the mask of ferociousness. This image is only an image within the mind, and its reality is not. Through the process of looking at it, this image shall be let go. So we could call this hatred, anger, jealousy, revenge, you know, what are some other, war, anything that could be represented by ferociousness is really represented by this particular horse. And what NTI is saying is that it isn't true that all of those masks of ferociousness are actually just defense mechanisms. And what they're covering up is the fear. Whenever anybody is hating or is angry or attacking in any way, it's a defense mechanism covering up the fear. And remember, NTI is not about others. NTI is always about me, the reader. You know, me, the reader. So what this is really telling me is that if I feel ferociousness coming up in me, if I feel anger, hatred, jealousy, attack, revenge, you know, anything of that flavor coming up in me, this is a good time to go to my root cause inquiry journaling. You know, I may think I'm mad at you because you did such and such, but if that ferociousness is in me, there's something underneath, and that anger, that ferociousness is a defense mechanism. And if I'm really a student of true spirituality, I want to look underneath the defense mechanism and find out what's really upsetting me. And so that's what this is saying. Don't believe that ferociousness. That's not true. It's never true. It can do all kinds of things in the world, but it's just a defense mechanism. So in order to understand what's going on, you need to look underneath it. You need to look deeply at it and see what's there. All right, so now I'll read verses 5 to 6. When the Lamb opened the third seal, I heard the third living creature say, "Come." I looked, and there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice among the four living creatures saying, "A quart of wheat for a day's wages, and 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil and the wine." All right, so NTI says, the third seal represents judgment, which maintains the illusion of the world. It is judgment that separates and makes separateness seem real. The scales of judgment must be laid aside. And there's a couple of really key places in NTI where it's taught us about judgment. One of those key places was NTI Romans chapter 2. That's when we asked the question, what would it be like if everything was different than it is? And it says when we asked that question, two options were set in front of us. One option said, well, everything is as it is, and that's the only truth. And the other option says that, it's different now. And it says we tossed away the first option, and we became engrossed by the second option, which means we put all of our attention on that, and we went very, very deeply into it's different now. And when we began to go very, very deeply into that idea, we begin to have an experience of something different than truth or different than heaven. And when we began to have that experience, I think two things really happen simultaneously is fear and judgment. It's kind of like, oh, what have I done? I've done something bad. You know, and so this is the first judgment that ever occurred, and that was the beginning of the next layer of illusion. It's like going deeper down the rabbit hole, as they say. And NTI Romans chapter 2 says, judgment is the building block of illusion. And what's happened now is we have made this incredible world with so many opportunities to judge. You know, just everywhere. I mean, we can look around this room and find things to judge. You know, just everywhere there are things to judge. And that this is like a game, but the judgment keeps the game alive. And so if we want to know reality instead of the game, then we have to learn to let go of the judgment, because the judgment is what made it, and the judgment is what keeps it alive. Also, another place where NTI really talks about judgment well is, it's either NTI Luke 16 or 17, it might be both. It talks about how when we do judge, we give meaning. So let me see if I can make up an example. Well, let's say I judge a homeless person as a lazy, alcoholic, drug addict. And then because I believe my own judgment, then the next homeless person I see is another lazy, alcoholic, drug addict, and the next one I see is another lazy, alcoholic, drug addict, and pretty soon, you know, for me, that's all homeless people are. When they ask for my money, the only thing they're going to do is go buy drugs, and I have this huge judgment against a whole population of people because I keep reapplying the meaning and believing it. And that's just one example. You know, we do this about everything. I mean, most of us have some kind of ideas about what women are, what men are, what politicians are. I mean, you know, even these huge classes, I can just list them, and people will have ideas about, again, what each of those classes of people are, what each of those groups are. And that's because we make up meaning and we believe our meaning. So in addition to Romans chapter 2, which says that is literally how, like, this chair and this room and this world gets made, is through judgment. In addition to that, even within the illusion, there's another illusion, the individual illusion, that comes from the filter of our mind and the judgments we make. Because, you know, not everybody sees homeless people the way that I might if I judge them as, what I say, lazy, alcoholic, drug addicts, right? Other people may see something completely different. So we almost have two layers of illusion happening there. And both layers of illusion are caused by judgment. So if we want to see clearly, if we want to know truth, we have to let go of judgment. Because all judgment is doing is blinding us. In fact, double blinding us, it sounds like. So that's the black horse. It represents the judgment that must be laid aside. So now I'll read verses 7 and 8. When the Lamb opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth living creature say, "Come." I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. Its rider was named Death, and Hades was following close behind him. They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beasts of the earth. All right, well, NTI somewhat agrees with the Bible, because NTI does say the fourth seal represents death. But then it says, which is the symbol of the illusion of separateness. For life cut off from life can only be death. So death is a fitting symbol of that which cannot be true. In NTI Acts, I think it might have been chapter 5, but you know, when I get to that level of detail, I could be wrong. But in NTI Acts, it's talking to us, the reader, and it's talking to our belief that we're separate from God. And it says, but God is life, and you live. Right now, even as you sit here reading this, you live. And so if you live, you cannot be separate from God. And in its own way, that's exactly what these verses are telling us, that, you know, we live. I mean, I can't even read Revelation and listen to some crazy church's interpretation and believe, you know, and have them tell me it's going to happen in the year 2021 and believe it's going to be happening and be absolutely terrified and, you know, dressing in funny dresses that they tell me I have to wear and going knocking door to door, warning people about the coming Armageddon. And I can't even do all that if I'm not alive, right? Alive is the basis not only for clarity, but alive is the basis of illusion. Alive, life, isness is the foundation for everything. And isness is what everything has in common. So that's what this is saying, is that this fourth seal represents death, and death is a great symbol of life cut off from life. However, life is not cut off from life. Otherwise, you wouldn't even be reading this. So there is no death, right? It would be, you know, it can't be, because it's never happened that life is cut off from life. All right, so that takes us to verses 9 to 11. When he opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain because of the word of God and the testimony they had maintained. They called out in a loud voice, "How long, sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood?" Then each of them was given a white robe, and they were told to wait a little longer, until the number of their fellow servants and brothers who were to be killed, as they had been, was completed. All right. NTI says, the fifth seal represents the options of fear and trust. In the moment of not knowing, this is the choice that must be made. You must choose to trust that which you do not know, or choose to fear it. And this choice is everything that follows given. This has two levels of meaning. One level we could call in practical everyday life. You know, we never know what's going to happen next in life. Sometimes we think we do. And when we think we know that life is under control, we can feel somewhat at peace. Other times, circumstances are laid out in such a way that we know we don't know what's going to happen. And what most people choose when they know they don't know what's going to happen is to be afraid. That's the common choice, right?
Yeah.
and then because they're afraid, they experience fear, and who knows what else they may experience. Struggle, they may experience arguments with other people. I mean, it depends on the story. But everything is coming from the fact, all of that upset is coming from the fact that they chose to fear. And so, what this is saying is, you, first of all, you do not know. You do not, even when we sit here right now, maybe all three of us think our lives are perfectly in control, and we know exactly what our household is going to look like when we get home, and we know exactly what it's going to look like in the morning. One of us could be wrong. I hope not, but one of us could be wrong. It could be something very different than we're expecting. So even when we think we know, we really don't know, right? And so what this is saying is, if you can just live with this attitude of trust instead of living with an attitude of fear, everything is going to be completely different in your experience. And when you know you don't know, because circumstances have laid that out, you know, you've lost a job or something has happened and you know you don't know what's going to happen next, choose trust. Choose trust. Everything's going to be okay. You don't have to know how. Just choose trust. And really, in that practical way, in that everyday living type of way, we could call that a training ground. Because at some point, each and every one of us is going to get what we want more than anything. And that is the opportunity to let go of the ego completely and awaken to truth. And what happens, from what I'm told by those who have had the experience, is that there is a fear that occurs at the ego level, a fear of death, ego death, right? And that somehow what we are, because we're not the ego, we have a wisdom, we need to learn to trust. We need to rest, even though the ego is afraid, relax, release, let go, and let the awakening happen. Those who have had this opportunity and weren't able to do that will tell you that when they clung to the ego's fear instead of trust, they were jerked back and the opportunity to awaken kind of closed. And of course, those people are told, well, you'll get another opportunity, but no one knows when. It might not even be this lifetime, right? So another reason for choosing trust, and some people will tell you this, and I think this is true. Some people will tell you the reason for choosing trust in this lifetime is because if you're living from trust, you're going to manifest a lifetime that's more gentle. If you're living from fear, you're going to manifest a lifetime that has more suffering in it and more fear in it. And I think there's a truth to that. But I would say even more, the reason to live from trust is because you're practicing for that moment of letting go of ego. You want to become accustomed to trusting. You want to become accustomed to trusting even when the ego's in fear. You want to be a skilled truster, right? If that is a word. A skilled truster. So that when grace comes and offers you the opportunity to awaken, you can trust right through that doorway. So that takes us to verses 12 to 14. I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. And the stars in the sky fell to earth as late figs drop from a fig tree when shaken by a strong wind. The sky receded like a scroll rolling up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. All right. So this says, the sixth seal represents the end of perception. And another way to word this would be that the sixth seal represents that opportunity to awaken, right? The sixth seal represents the end of perception. The way you see shall be based on how you have chosen. You shall see illusion, which has stepped forward to be released, or you shall see fear made real, and you shall run from it. So we were told with the fifth seal that the choice we make here, everything else follows. So if we choose fear, when the opportunity to awaken comes, we're going to have an extremely fearful experience. But if we have chosen trust, we're going to be able to rest, allow, and let that experience of awakening, whatever it is, allow it to complete itself and in effect kind of take us. Now, I love verses 15 to 17. It says, fear shall not be your victory. In making this choice, meaning fear, you shall know that you have chosen death. And this means the bodily death. You're choosing to remain human, so you're choosing to, at some point, you know, have a bodily death. But even this is an illusion, as anything that is not love is not real. You experience the effects of fear because you have chosen the effects of fear. In seeing this and knowing the gratitude of the truth is true, you offer yourself the opportunity to step back and choose once again. So let's imagine that I'm having an awakening opportunity. And I get very, very fearful. I side with the ego and I believe the ego's fear and I don't go. And then the next thing I choose is to judge myself as this horrible spiritual student. You know, I've spent my whole life preparing for this moment and I wasn't able to do it. And there are people who have done this, so I'm, you know, only sharing what I've heard other people talk about. What can then follow is like a deep depression. You know, like it can really turn pretty, pretty dark. But what this is saying is even if you're in that darkness of having chosen fear, if you realize, wait a minute, my whole dark experience is happening now because I chose fear. If I choose trust right now, my experience can start moving in another direction. You can choose trust in that moment. This is saying fear is never, ever the final choice. Fear is always a temporary choice. It could be a temporary choice that lasts years. It could be a temporary choice that lasts lifetimes. But it can't last forever. Fear is never the final choice. So even in the practicality of everyday life, let's say circumstances arise where you know that you don't know, and you get really fearful, and you start trying to control, and you start arguing with people about how things should be, and you're suffering, and then you notice, ah, look at how upset I am. This is because I chose to be afraid. I'm going to change it. I'm going to just choose trust. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm just going to trust. And as soon as you can make that choice, things will brighten up, lighten up, and begin to change. So fear is never the final choice. Isn't that nice to know?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I like that very much. And that is the end of NTI Revelation chapter 6. So I will leave it up to you. NTI Revelation chapter 7 is kind of long. It's already 20 till. We usually stop around a quarter till or 10 till, so we probably shouldn't go after it, actually. Also, I will tell you what NTI Revelation chapter 7 is. It might be a really good chapter to start with when we come back on June 16th because it's a review of all of NTI. So it'd be kind of a good place to start after a month off, don't you think?
Yeah, and it wouldn't be good to stop in the middle of it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be good to stop in the middle of it. So we'll just pause right here then after Revelation chapter 6, and we'll go to chapter 7. Now we have a full month. So the exercise that we choose is one that we can practice for a full month. So the first one that comes to mind, well, there is one, but we've practiced it so many times. It's, again, keeping our true desire up front. But we've done that so many times. We should be experts at that by now. So the other one is noticing, even in little bitty things, when we've chosen fear. So it could even be just that sense of worry, that sense of anxiety. It might even show up as anger, because remember, anger is a defense mechanism over fear, right? Mm-hmm. So try to be alert to whenever we're choosing fear, and then see if you can look at that and choose just to trust, even though there's nothing specific to trust, maybe, but you're just choosing that attitude of trust, and start seeing if you can't become more comfortable living in trust instead of living in fear. How does that sound? In a whole month, we should each have options to practice, I would think. And so I will turn off the recorder, and we'll have a little bit of silence.